to Real Truth for Today with Pastor Jeff Shreve, Senior Pastor of First Baptist Church in Texarkana, Texas. Now, here's Pastor Jeff.
Well, good morning and welcome to Real Truth for Today. Pastor Jeff Shreve here. Hope you're having a great week, a great morning. Wanted to read to you from Acts chapter 15, beginning in verse 36. It says, "After some days, Paul said to Barnabas, 'Let us return and visit the brethren in every city in which we proclaim the word of the Lord and see how they are.' Barnabas wanted to take John, called Mark, along with him also. But Paul kept insisting that they should not take him along, who had deserted them in Pamphylia and had not gone with them to the work. And there occurred such a sharp disagreement that they separated from one another, and Barnabas took Mark with him and sailed to Cyprus. But Paul chose Silas and left, being committed by the brethren to the grace of the Lord, and he was traveling through Syria and Cilicia, strengthening the churches." Well, I have with me in the studio today Dr. Chris Schroeder. Dr. Schroeder is the teaching pastor at First Baptist Texarkana, and he pretty much serves as our associate pastor and helps me with the staff and a host of other things, does a lot of counseling, and so I welcome him to the program. Thanks for coming on, Chris.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I have a bone to pick with you.
Uh-oh.
Conflict I want to stir.
A conflict. Well, that's what we're going to talk about today, conflict in relationships. Chris, I heard somebody say years ago, what's the definition of a conflict? It's two people.
That's right. Whenever you have people in general, you're going to have conflict because we are different. God wired us different. God created us different. We have, we all come in different shapes and sizes and backgrounds and experiences and family of origin, temperaments. And so, of course, you're going to have conflict whenever there's two people involved.
So the biggest area that we see, one of the biggest areas is marriage.
Yes, yes.
Marriage and family.
Yeah, of course, marriage is the highest ideal relationship, you know, between a husband and a wife. And so any of the principles that we talk about in marriage or that are needed in marriage, those would be needed in every other relationship.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting how in the Bible you have two heavyweights. Uh-huh. I mean, they don't get any bigger than Paul of, you know, Tarsus. Uh-huh. Saul of Tarsus, Paul
maybe,
the Apostle.
Maybe the greatest Christian.
Yeah. Right. And Barnabas, who's the son of encouragement.
Right.
And those two guys have such a disagreement that they have to depart from one another. They can't go on the second missionary journey together.
Right.
Which is kind of shocking when you think about it.
Yeah, especially Barnabas just being the encourager. I don't know, I could see maybe where Paul would maybe be a little difficult, but Barnabas being the encourager, they're still on the same team, but they part and match up differently as they continue.
Right. It's pretty wild. So that's Acts chapter 15, and they had a very successful first missionary journey, and then Barnabas was like, hey, you know, or Paul said to Barnabas, let us go on a second missionary journey. But John called Mark, we know him as John Mark, he wrote the Gospel of Mark. He was really Peter's true child in the faith.
Yeah, Peter really is the one behind Mark, right? And Mark wrote for him,
right,
basically.
Yeah, the early church father said that Mark wrote Peter's gospel. Mm-hmm. You know, people want to know, why didn't Peter write a gospel since he was the number one name in disciples, always mentioned first?
Well, speaking of that, I mean, talking about conflict and talking about going your separate ways, what's the interaction between Peter and Paul? They have a quick encounter and go separate ways. Very different personalities, but both used greatly by God, but both very different.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny how there are certain people, they're just wired in such a way that they wouldn't necessarily be very good together.
Uh-huh,
because
right,
they're both type A drivers.
Mm.
And you can't have two people driving.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's kind of funny when people were saying that they wanted Trump to choose Ron DeSantis as his VP. Well, it's like, yeah, those are two bulls.
Two alphas trying, and in that vice president role, especially with someone like Trump, is going to need to be definitely a second more than a number one.
Right.
Which, I mean, Vance is pretty strong himself, but DeSantis leading a major state and just definitely being an alpha.
Right. And obviously, Barnabas, from what we gather from Scripture, he's not this I have to be in charge kind of guy. But the Apostle Paul is going to be, he's going to be the leader.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it was John MacArthur that said, you know, in that situation, Barnabas was right in that John Mark was redeemable, but he, in his opinion, he says that Barnabas should have conceded to Paul as leader and say, okay, you don't want to take him, we're not going to take him. But Paul does come around and says, bring John Mark.
He does end up bringing, John Mark back with him.
So John Mark, which is good news for us, because just as an aside from our topic today, just because you bail out, that doesn't mean you're done for the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm. Paul gave him another chance eventually.
Right. And Barnabas saw that, hey, he's useful. I think that's what Paul says, bring John Mark, he's useful to me for service. And so he saw that he was useful. So, Chris, when we talk about running into these situations where two people, for our purposes, Acts 15, Paul's walking with God, Barnabas is walking with God, they want to do the will of God, yet they can't seem to get on the same page. What do you make of that?
Well, first of all, we have to look at conflict as conflict is not necessarily a bad thing. Conflict is a necessary thing. You know, conflict is something that actually grows us, makes us stronger. Passion is involved. And so it's when we sweep things or ignore things and don't deal with it, that's when the problem comes. And so I think we most of us naturally don't like conflict, but conflict is necessary for growth. And so within relationships, we want to have a little back and forth, a little tension, a little conflict, because that actually makes us stronger. And so, first of all, we just have to look at our perspective of conflict. The conflict isn't necessarily a bad thing.
So, in marriage, let's say before you get married, you're dating and you really like this person. Obviously, there's a strong attraction. There's a physical attraction, spiritual, emotional attraction. But then you hit a conflict in the dating. Debbie and I didn't have a lot of conflicts that we experienced in dating, but when you get married, you are going to run into those conflicts. Not that you have to fight every day, or obviously nobody wants that, but it can be a shock to the system when you dated somebody and it was pretty easy, and then all of a sudden you get married and you start running into conflict after conflict after conflict.
Yeah, in general, the saying goes, opposites attract. So there's a little bit of an opposite component, especially with man and woman. There's an opposite attract, but then opposites attack. And so those first things that drew you to each other start to repel you from each other. You start to be annoyed by those same things that you love so much. But like when we're doing pre-marriage counseling, we'll ask couples if they've had any conflict. And I think that's pretty typical that they haven't had a lot of conflict, which is good because you're building something. You're in the early stages, so that makes sense. But yeah, then learning how to resolve conflict when you start having conflict. And it's like some couples, they start having conflict like, oh man, maybe I married the wrong person.
Right.
Maybe I just made a major mistake. And it's like, no, conflict is a part of this. Like we've said, with relationships, you're going to have conflict. And so it's how you resolve the conflict is the key.
Yeah. Okay, so in marriage, we have the way God set it up. The husband is the leader. He's to lovingly lead his wife, and the wife is to respectfully follow her husband. When a wife feels like her husband is making a bad decision for the marriage or for the family, is she just supposed to smile and take it, or how is she supposed to respond to that?
I think that's always a real challenge for women, especially that just because he's called to be the leader, spiritually, biblically, be the leader, that doesn't mean that he's naturally a better leader. Sometimes she is naturally a better leader. And that takes a lot of wisdom, that takes a lot of, honestly, courage and strength to be that helpmate, be that second chair, and be that helpmate for him. And so there's a lot of dance. There's a dance to that, you know, and being in that second chair, being that support, that help, even though you're actually a stronger leader. I think a good leader that the husband is supposed to be is going to listen to his wife, respect what she has to say, give credibility to what she's saying.
Yeah, get her perspective.
Yeah, get her perspective for sure, because that's one of the beautiful things about marriage is you get someone else's perspective, and especially you get the other gender's perspective in decisions and life itself. And so that has to do with leadership. Any kind of leadership, good leaders know how to get the takes of everyone that's right. in the group, you know?
Well, what I've noticed over the years, Chris, I think that the more secure you are in who you are and how God made you, how God wired you, just your station in life, then you're not looking at people that might bring questions as you're questioning my leadership. You're, mm-hmm. you know, whether it's your wife or whether it's somebody that works underneath you. Because when you're secure, then you can accept those. Hey, that's a good idea. You know, and I don't take that as a personal attack on, well, you must think I'm not doing a very good job for you to bring that to me. And that's not necessarily the case.
Well, I don't know who it was that I was reading one time, and they were talking about as you grow as a leader, your skin gets tougher. Uh-huh. Your skin gets thicker. So your heart stays soft, but your skin gets thicker.
Right.
So you're not taking everything defensively. That's the worst, you know, when you just take everything that's said and you get defensive about it.
As a personal attack.
And you have what we call, you need to have what we call humility of approachability. So the person that you're in relationship with can come to you with anything, and you're going to hear and receive. And there's a safe place, a soft place that person's going to land, and they're not going to get, you know, lashed at because they don't like what you're saying.
Well, I think about, you know, Debbie and I have been married for 39 years. And, you know, when we first started out, it's like, okay, I was taught that husbands, you're the leader. So yeah. Debbie, I'm going to be the leader. Debbie is naturally a better leader than I am, uh-huh. Just in her gift mix and her personality. And so it was a challenge for her to submit to me. And it was a challenge for me to lead. And it was a good thing because it forced me to lead. But you know, we've grown and figured out how do we do this, because marriage is, you know, a dance perfected over time where you figure out
finding your rhythm.
Right.
Yeah.
And you know, I'd be a foolish person to not tap into her God given strengths mm-hmm. just because, well, I'm supposed to do that. So we can't ask you about this. For instance, Debbie's a lot better balancing the checkbook and paying mm-hmm. the bills and that mm-hmm. kind of thing than I am, because she's very exact and she'll mm-hmm. spend hours trying to find a dime, you know, on the checkbook that's mm-hmm. not there.
More detail.
A lot more detail oriented. So that doesn't mean you're a bad leader as a husband if you let your wife do the bills.
Mm-hmm.
But now I did learn this, that if money is tight, it's better for the husband to do the bills, because a wife will have trouble segmenting that from
the emotional component of it.
Right.
Yeah, that makes sense.
It's just, and then she's always nervous. We're not mm-hmm. going to have enough. And so he's better at shielding her from that. Hey, God's going to provide for us. Let me pay the bills. And so you're not seeing that on a regular basis.
And just even being a leader and just in that time of pressure when the money is tight, that would be the time when the leader would need to step up. You know, our natural tendency as men from the original sin is to be passive, mm-hmm. to shrink back. And so a passive man, you know, in the beginning may be attractive to her because he's not causing a lot of conflict. There's not a lot of tension. But over time, I've heard this over and over from women, that becomes just a real sore spot when he's so passive and unwilling to step up in difficult times.
Well, I don't have the quote in front of me, but one of the famous quotes from Judy Garland was to men, and she said, "Don't surrender your leadership. Mm-hmm. We need you to lead. We're not built for leadership. Mm-hmm. We'll fight you for the steering wheel, but you have to win the fight mm-hmm. because we're not made for this."
Yeah.
And I thought it was great, great counsel to men.
Yeah. Not someone like Judy Garland, but one of our staff person that I've worked with, and she's really, really strong. She's a strong leader, and she just recently told me, like, we want men to step up and lead.
Right.
Like, we want that. We desire that. So she knows that she is a more more strong in that area, but she wants men to lead.
Right. Well, and hats off to her for that.
Yeah.
You know, I think as women understand that, it's like, okay, well, God didn't make me to be the leader here. He made me to submit to my husband, which takes a lot of growth, spiritual maturity.
Very much so.
And it takes faith, because yeah. I'm gonna trust the
and
Lord.
And it takes strength to submit in that
to
way.
To do that, yeah. Well, you're listening to Real Truth for Today. Pastor Jeff Shreve here talking to my good friend, Dr. Chris Schroeder. We're talking about conflict in relationships. What does the Bible have to say about that? And what is the way home? And how do we handle the conflicts? We'll be right back.
This is Real Truth for Today. Podcasts of the program are available on the podcast page at AFR.net. Now, back to Pastor Jeff Shreve.
Welcome back to the program. Pastor Jeff Shreve here talking to Dr. Chris Schroeder. We're talking about conflict in relationships. And, you know, nobody is immune to conflicts. As we started the program, we read the passage from Acts 15 where the Apostle Paul and Barnabas got into a conflict, and it was such a severe disagreement that they couldn't come to terms with it, and they had to part ways. You know, Chris, I don't think they parted being mad at each other.
Mm-hmm.
They probably just said, hey, you're not willing to budge, I'm not willing to budge, we're going to need to go separate. Our separate ways.
Yeah, that's a great point. Not in marriage, because we believe that marriage is for a lifetime, but there might be situations like this, like the Paul and Barnabas situation, where there is a necessary ending, where there's an ending where they can now go and be leaders with other teammates.
Right.
You know?
And the Paul and Barnabas thing, the interesting thing about that is both those guys were wanting to please the Lord.
Yes.
It's not like
one was in sin or something.
Right. So you think of Abram and Lot, Genesis mm-hmm. 13. Well, Lot, you know, pitched his tent towards Sodom. He's making a terrible decision. Barnabas isn't making a terrible decision when he chose John Mark and they go out on a missionary journey, although the Bible doesn't tell us much about their journeys. It now follows Paul and mm-hmm. Silas. But obviously, Barnabas is a great Christian. Uh-huh. I mean, he's walking with the Lord. And then John Mark ends up being a godly guy, and the Lord uses him in great ways. So sometimes God can take something that, not sometimes, all the time, he works things together for good to those who love him. And now he's got two teams as opposed to one.
Yeah, and they're able to use the giftings that they have. It's maybe like being like a church planner, like someone leaving a church and going to start another church, you know, coming out of one ministry and starting another ministry. It's not a negative thing. It's actually growing the God's kingdom.
Okay, Chris, speaking of that, so every pastor listening, every staff member listening, we've all had the experiences of having conflict, not just in the marriage relationship, but in the staff relationships.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, every church is going to have some difficulties there because we're dealing with people.
And it's high stakes, and, you know, the evil one wants division. You know, the mm-hmm. evil one wants to bring disunity. So, of course, there's going to be conflict.
Mm-hmm. And so sometimes church members don't realize that. They're like, well, you guys can't get along. Somebody's in sin here. And if the pastor starts having trouble with several, and it could be the pastor's fault, mm-hmm. or it could just be the devil's trying to wreak havoc in the church. And
well, I think one of the most difficult parts of being the senior pastor, if a staff member leaves, if two members leave, and it really has nothing to do with the senior pastor, they're called to a different position. They like the senior pastor, but they're called to a different position. People in the church who like that associate that left, what is the senior pastor doing wrong? You know, he ran them off. You hear that narrative, and it's like, no, there was no conflict. There's no problem. But people may have a tendency to read into that like there's something negative happening.
Right. Well, and then people that leave the church, you know, sometimes they leave the church for, you know, they get upset about X, Y, and Z. They didn't like, you know, whatever it was that's relatively minor, but they got mad about it. You know, you had mentioned that, you know, you had seen somebody get mad in Sunday school because their chairs were...
Yeah, their chair wasn't... They redid the table, the way the tables were set up, and they were so upset. This Sunday school member was so upset that they started to walk out of class because their table was in a different spot.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's like, well, that's not a...
Talk about majoring in the minors.
Yeah, don't want to do that. But we are going to have conflict, and we, you know, the goal of marriage, the goal of any interpersonal relationship is not to be conflict-free, mm-hmm. it's to be able to handle conflict well and manage conflict and be able to come to a solution. So, Chris, with all the marriage and family counseling that you do... you know, let me just give you a scenario. So the husband comes in and says, you know, my wife and I aren't getting along and our love life stinks. And that's typically a big thing for a husband, you know, and he notices when that's not going well. And then the wife says, well, he doesn't help me around the house. He doesn't help me with the kids. I'm
feel like I'm a single parent or whatever. So you have all this conflict. What is the way that you, when you sit down with a situation like that, how do you sift through all the feelings and find the core of what's going on and then how to—
Yeah, that's right. That's what I was just going to say. You got to get to the core of what's going on. You've got to get really to the heart. Sometimes we get so trapped with the symptoms or the behaviors that we forget what's going on in the heart. And we know there's certain heart characteristics that are needed for there to be unity in a relationship, for there to be not conflict-free, but to be able to get through conflict. Uh-huh. And so things like grace and mercy and empathy, sympathy towards one another, listening, communicating well, all of those things are heart issues that have to get to the forefront. Maybe it's not that there's not having any kind of romance in the relationship, but maybe the reason they're not having romance in a relationship is because they're not connecting in other areas, mm-hmm. So that's just one symptom, but you got to figure out what's going on the inside, what's going on in the heart.
Okay, so I had a guy tell me just yesterday, he said, I was asking him, I hadn't seen him as a friend of mine, I hadn't seen for a long time, and I was asking him about his divorce. And uh-huh. I said, so how long were you married? He said, almost 20 years. And he said it was just not a good marriage from the start. He said, I kind of got married because I was just feeling like it was time for me to get married. If I was going to have kids, I needed to get married, have kids. And she was kind of the same. And he said, so, it's probably from the get-go, we weren't really well suited for one another. Mm-hmm. And we limped along until we finally said, let's call it quits.
Yeah.
Do you feel like because that describes lots of people.
Yeah.
They just feel like I didn't make a good choice.
Yeah.
So would you tell people they have a lot of conflict and they're very unhappy and they just feel like I don't really like this person.
Yeah.
I love them because I'm commanded by God to love them, but I don't like them and I don't want to be married to them. What would you say to that person?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I have never— I can't think of one time I've never advised divorce.
Right.
I just don't think it ever should be an option. I do think that any marriage can be saved. I do think there's times where a couple probably needs to separate, maybe even for their own safety, they mm-hmm. need to separate. But I've never recommended divorce, and especially mm-hmm. just because they don't seem compatible. Because I do believe that if marriage is a sanctifying tool, it's something to grow us, to make us more like Christ, mm-hmm. then we look at the heart, we see what is God doing, what areas is He pounding out, those hard areas in our heart, is He chiseling out? And then, if we start acting in the right way, we start following behaviors that would build a healthy relationship, the heart, the love for that person can grow, can heat up again. And so, and always reminding couples of at some point you were in love, because mm-hmm. at some point you didn't marry someone that, I don't know what I'm doing here and I'm just going to say these vows. Right. At some point you thought this was a good decision. And so what was taking place at that time, and kind of try and get back to that original love.
So
try to rekindle that fire
in your life. So, you had a situation that didn't work out, wasn't your choice, mm-hmm. but I'm assuming you had a lot of conflict in your first marriage.
Yes. Yes.
A lot of fighting.
Oh yeah, definitely.
She would have been very difficult to live with.
Yeah. And I mean, I would say not compatible. Like, we were not compatible as far as, was probably not a good choice, or definitely was not a good choice for us to get married. But I do believe that any marriage, if it is worked on, and if, it takes two, that's what's different than
sure.
than most other things. It takes two. But if both people are working on it and are willing to work on it, then they can be healed, especially if you get outside help, if you get counseling help, and if you, are part of a church family and all those things. I think that any marriage can be
right.
Saved.
Well, people ask a lot about remarriage, and you have the hardliners that are like, once you get married, that's for life, and uh-huh. even if your spouse leaves you, you can't remarry. And I they'll go to different scriptures and say things that it on the surface sometimes it appears like, okay, it's kind of like that. But I think when I look at the scripture and the grace of God, divorce can't be the unpardonable sin.
Right. It's just like other sins. It can't be exclusive to other sins. So just like other sins are forgiven by God and grace is shown by God, marriage and divorce would be the same thing. And so God always gives a clean slate, fresh start, you know, after forgiveness is, and repentance and forgiveness.
Right. So I've counseled people and they'll say, well, I know I can't get married again. I was like, you know, God would want you to reconcile with your husband or wife, however the situation, if that's possible. But if the other person is just like, hey, I've moved on, I'm dating other people, I'm probably going to get married, you know, and especially if they remarry, I mean, I think that you're free to marry in the Lord.
Right.
You know, and you're not just, I can't ever move forward, because I've told people, I said, you know, you're a 50-year-old guy or a 60-year-old. You could have another life with somebody else.
Yeah.
And God is the God of
second, right. Third, fourth, fifth chances. I mean, I don't know, there's probably other verses that would be more appropriate, but just thinking of Romans 12:18, you know, live at peace with everyone as far as it depends on you. So there's a condition there that as far as it depends on you. So you've done everything that you can on your side of the street to make things work. And again, it takes another person. That person may be in another relationship or moved on.
Right.
I don't believe that God wants us to remain stuck. He wants us to repent. Is everything that we can do on our side to repent, not regret, not remorse, but truly repent, you know, receive that conviction, repent and change. And God gives a new opportunity with his grace.
One of the things we used to say in at Family Life, when Debbie and I spoke with Family Life at marriage conferences, you know, marriage is more than God's interested in your happiness.
Yeah.
God's interested in your holiness.
Right.
And, you know, if happiness and holiness, you know, sometimes those don't intersect.
Right.
Sometimes you do what's right and it doesn't necessarily feel good.
Yeah.
And it's not easy. This is hard. This is, you know, discipline. This is getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning to go to the gym. I don't want to do it, but I need to do it to get to where I want to go. And so, you know, the conflicts in marriage can be like that, that this isn't any fun right now, but it is going to produce.
Well, it very well could be a byproduct. Happiness could be a byproduct. It shouldn't be our goal. Our goal is holiness. Our goal is to be pleasing to the Lord. And as we do that over time, happiness is a result, because I don't think that marriage, specifically marriage, is supposed to be, you know, drudgery.
Right,
you know,
right.
It is a fruitful, meaningful thing. And I've seen tons of marriages be very difficult, maybe getting to the point of separating or divorce, and they've begun to work and they've begun to focus on it, and now their marriages are meaningful and just real happy and joyous.
Right.
Relationship.
You know, thinking about conflict in relationships, I remember talking to a couple. They wanted me to marry them, and she had been married and cheated on.
Mm.
So she was very distrusting.
Yes.
And he was very naive. And I just, in talking to him, I was like, this guy doesn't realize what he's biting off here.
Mm-hmm.
Because she's riding at a 9 all the time with distrust issues.
Well, your old wounds, they don't just go away. I mean, they turn to scars, hopefully, but they're still scars. There's still memories there. And so if you marry someone that has been married before and been through a hard relationship and that relationship is broken, there's some issues there that have to be dealt with.
Right.
And so hopefully that person is not looking to their new spouse to heal those wounds and to complete them. Hopefully they're still looking to the Lord to be healed.
Right.
But you don't always start out as like 22, 23-year-olds with just a clean slate and not much. Even that, you have your family of origin.
Sure.
You know, nobody comes out of their family of origin unscathed, because we all are fallen people. We're all sinners, you know, sinners raising sinners.
Right.
And so we all have brokenness to some extent. And marriage is not the tool to heal you. Christ is the one who heals you.
Right.
But marriage is a great tool to strengthen you and sanctify you.
Well, I know, Chris, you do a lot of stuff with premarital counseling and the SIMBA, saving your marriage before it starts. You know, I think everybody's got a certain amount of baggage, but the critical piece in my mind is being able to recognize the baggage that you have, recognize mm-hmm. the wounds from the past that you know and your spouse knows or your spouse-to-be knows, hey, this is an issue that I'm working through, but I'm not blind to it.
Right.
So if I have trust issues, mm-hmm. We bring that out into the open. And
I think we have a section in our pre-marriage. I think we call it caution flags. So we don't call it baggage. I think we call it caution flags, and it literally shows the caution flags. And some people will have like 12 caution flags, and we go through each one of those. Sometimes the person may have like one caution flag, you know, but sometimes person has like 12 caution flags. Could be like anxiety, depression, some kind of eating disorder, could be some sort of addiction, could be their family of origin. There's something that they're bringing into this new relationship that, like you said, exactly, just at least being aware of those caution flags, both spouses being aware of those caution flags.
Right. Yeah, and it's really, you're really doing yourself and your spouse to be a disservice if you know that there's something there and you're not disclosing that.
Yeah.
Because then you're blindsiding. They will find that out.
Yeah. But I mean, God is so good because he wants us to grow and he gives us the ability to grow, to be sanctified throughout the rest of our life. And marriage is one of those tools that he uses.
Uh-huh. Well, marriage is a great way, especially having kids, a great way to deal with selfishness.
Oh, yes. I mean, that just automatically starts to wear off that selfishness, especially with men. Don't you think so?
Yeah, I think.
Men who have not been married and they're just having children, being married, it just gets you off of yourself because we are naturally pretty selfish people.
Yeah, especially as men. Well, you're listening to Real Truth for Today. Pastor Jeff Shreve here talking to my good friend, Dr. Chris Schroeder. We're talking about conflict in relationships and what does the Bible say about that? And what is God's remedy for dealing with those conflicts, dealing with them in a godly way, in a healing way, in a way that brings glory to the Lord. So we'll be right back after the break. Preborn is there for hurting mothers and at-risk babies, standing strong in the darkest corners of our nation. By sponsoring an ultrasound, you can be there too. One ultrasound is just $28 and doubles a baby's chance at life. Please donate your best gift to save more babies at preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR.
If you'd like to contact Pastor Jeff, email PastorJeff@FromHisHeart.org. Now, back to Real Truth for Today with Pastor Jeff Shreve.
Welcome back to Real Truth for Today on American Family Radio. Pastor Jeff Shreve here talking to Dr. Chris Schroeder. We're talking about conflict in relationships. And Chris, we said one of the biggest relationship areas of life is marriage and family. And but not everybody's married.
Well, yeah, I don't want people to hear that and say like, well, I'm not married, so I'll check out. But take the same principles and apply those principles to any of your relationships, you know, employer, employee, coworker, some family member, a neighbor, the same principles apply.
Well, I was thinking about what Jesus said in Matthew 24, the Olivet Discourse, because lawlessness is increased, most people's love will grow cold.
Mm.
I think we're seeing a lot more conflict just in society.
Mm. Yeah, that's good.
Because people are angry.
Mm-hmm. That's good. I definitely think that's true. You're seeing less kindness, less empathy towards other people's hurts and struggles, more selfishness.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's a great point.
Well, and we can read in motive that is not our prerogative to do. Mm-hmm. We can't see into somebody's heart. I give you a for instance. So I was coming into the church, and we have to turn left off Moore's Lane,
yes,
to get into the church, and people stack up taking their kids to school. And so, you know, when the light turns red, you know, it's like, well, somebody would, if they're nice, they leave you a space you can go through. And this one guy didn't do it. And I just thought, what a jerk, you know?
Yeah.
And so I had to go down further and turn. And
just not thinking about anyone else but themselves.
Yes. Well, and so I immediately assigned motives to this guy.
Right.
He's a jerk. He's got this or that or whatever. And it's like, you know, the guy's probably, maybe he didn't even notice me.
Right.
Yeah. So I think giving, we've gotten to the place where we don't give people the benefit of the doubt
anymore.
That's a big one.
Yeah. Benefit of the doubt is a huge one. We talk a lot about that in marriage counseling. You've got to give benefit of the doubt. If you're constantly critical towards the other person and thinking that that person has the worst motives,
right,
you're going to create problems that aren't even there.
Right. Well, and you know, we've seen the funny meme sometimes about a wife will be in bed thinking, well, he's not talking to me. What is he thinking about? I bet he's thinking about this or that or the other. And he's thinking about his golf game. You know,
right.
Why did I miss that putt on hole number 15? You know,
yeah.
It's just totally different because a man is thinking different from the way a woman thinks. And
our waffle brains, our compartmental brains. Yeah. And honestly, more simple brains.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that I learned years and years ago, when you're having trouble in marriage or you're having trouble in any relationship, if you'll start to thank God for the good things about this person, maybe the person you work with or, you know, obviously the person you're married to, things that can be a little different with your kids because we're just naturally going to love our kids. They have to really do something that would cause us to not, you know, have trouble.
Yeah,
there.
They're from us. So right. There's like an unconditional love towards them.
Right. But with our spouse or with somebody at work, we can start to dislike that person. But I found that when you're disliking somebody, you're focusing in on the things that you dislike.
Yeah, and even the point of this person is a challenge for me, but they're actually making me better. They're actually growing me. And so thank you, God, for this person because they're teaching me patience, you know, because of the challenge that they are.
Yeah. Now, Chris, with churches that you've pastored over the years, I mean, there are always people at the church that are difficult. You know, we call them extra grace required, EGRs.
EGRs.
And that doesn't change just because you change churches. Then you go to another church.
They just change names, but it's the same type of person.
Yeah.
Some people think it is their job to make the pastor's life difficult, you know, and so what are you going to do about that? How are you going to handle those people?
Right. So how do you handle?
Yeah. Well, I guess first of all would be being aware that there are people like that. But what you said about what you were talking about, benefit of the doubt, maybe the person just, I think certain people think more critically. They just have a more critical mindset. And so it may not be that they're trying to make your life hard or get rid of you or anything like that, but they just see things in a more, you know, critical way. So it could be that. If it is the case of them really honestly not liking you, seeing your job, seeing your ministry really is an opportunity to grow and letting God use that person to grow your heart. You know, to see your own sanctification is taking place, just as you're teaching that to your church and you're wanting your people to grow, same thing is true for you. And one of the greatest ways to grow is dealing with difficult people.
Right. Well, I think too, like in marriage and in situations at work or at school or whatever, where you're going to be or around somebody a lot, is praying for that person, for God to bless that person.
Yes.
And for God to do great things for them. And then thanking God for the strengths that that person has. You know, Chris, even somebody that we would say, you know, I just don't like this person.
Yeah.
Even the worst of the worst has strengths.
Yes.
That you can focus on and thank God that this person has this strength, whatever it might be.
And my human tendency would be to just get away from that person, to be away from that person, not have anything to do with that person. And so I know that that's not what God would desire, though. God would desire me to lean in a little more and try and kind of, not necessarily win that person over, but you know, relate to that person.
Right.
But it's much easier to isolate yourself from that person. And that's not a good way to do ministry.
No, that can be hard. You know, the term I think is mirroring.
Yeah, you mirror what their behavior, you start mirroring their behavior.
Yeah. Yeah, I've struggled with that over the years. And if I sense somebody doesn't like me, I kind of keep my distance from them. And that's not the best way to do it. Mm-hmm. So We speak the truth in love, and we're to love our enemies. How do you love your enemies?
I really think there's certain people that God has placed in the church as for you as a pastor. There's certain people in the church that He has placed there that actually are, I don't know what their motive is, but God can use that person to really grow you, to really, you know, sharpen you, strengthen you, if we let it. But this is easy to talk about, but a lot harder to do.
Well, so much of counseling, and I've done a certain amount of that, you know, over the years I've been a pastor, and I'll tell people this. I said, listen, if I'm in your shoes, I'm struggling.
Yes.
This is hard. What I'm telling you is right, but what is right is not easy to do mm-hmm. so much of the time. Mm-hmm. It can be simple, but simple and easy are not the same thing.
Well, I mean, relationships in general are hard. So we have a tendency to, like if we've been hurt in the past, we've been hurt in different relationships, and we start pulling away and we start isolating ourselves, kind of self-defense, kind of protecting ourselves. Because relationships are challenging. So we have to make the decision whether we want to grow or not. And I think that we have to make sure that the vertical comes first. You know, we can't give what we don't have. And so we receive from the Lord, and then that pours out onto other people. But the horizontal part is challenging sometimes. Sometimes I think, you know, like being a monk, you know, being in a monastery, something like that, being on a retreat, just getting away permanently.
Right.
Sometimes that sounds more, you know, sounds kind of appealing. But God designed us to be in relationship. You know, He created Adam, and then He created Eve, and then He created, you know, many came. But remember, after Genesis 3, you know, sin enters the picture, and we have Cain and Abel right away, Genesis 4. And so conflict has been a part of relationships forever. Mm-hmm. And so learning to deal with that conflict is a big part of our Christian life.
Okay, so let's analyze a little bit the way Joseph dealt with a conflict with his brothers.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard people say, well, Joseph was passive-aggressive, mm-hmm. the way he didn't let on. You know, he knew who they were. They didn't
yeah.
know who he was.
Yeah.
And he kind of runs them through the ringer a little
yeah.
bit
yeah.
and then reveals himself to them. So if you were to analyze that from a counselor's perspective, how do you like the way Joseph went about?
I mean, in the beginning, obviously not well. In the beginning, his heart was hurt. He was really devastated from what his brothers had done, and that he had lost those years with them, and he had lost those years with his father that he loved very much. And so there was so much pain, so much hurt. So I would say in the beginning, he didn't handle it right, but he was wrestling. He was wrestling with God, and then eventually that conviction fell, and I think eventually he did do the right thing, and he welcomed them in.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's a turn. Like, there was a turn in his heart, mm-hmm. which Joseph, you know, his life is a roller coaster of ups and downs, and he turned at some point and mm-hmm. did the right thing.
You know, it's amazing with him that you don't ever see him get bitter.
Mm-hmm.
He had to battle that.
That's a great point, because bitterness is more of long-standing. Bitterness is more sinking into the heart. So there was pain, and there was a lashing out in a passive-aggressive way. But bitterness, if bitterness creeps in, you're in trouble. We're always trying to prevent bitterness,
right.
resentment and bitterness. But yeah, that's a good point. I don't think bitterness stuck to his heart, because he was able to do the right thing eventually.
Well,
but it did take him a while.
And not just with his brothers, but then Potiphar's wife lies about him.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I mean, I've preached about him in sermons, and it would have been easy for him to get bitter at God.
Mm-hmm.
God, why are you letting these things happen to me? I'm trusting you. I'm walking with you. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, so I get sent to Egypt. All right, I'm going to be a great slave for
yeah.
Potiphar.
Yeah.
And then I end up in prison for not doing what's wrong.
Yeah.
He could have easily slept with Potiphar's wife.
Unfairly. Yeah. That's what I think is so great about Joseph, is his attitude and the time he took to really take care of his own heart, you know, and do the right thing eventually. But I don't think it was always automatic. He's not a Christ, you know, he's not Christ. It's not automatic, yeah. but he wrestled with it. But eventually he always does the right thing.
Yeah. Well, in Hebrews 5:8, it says, though he was a son, he learned obedience through the things that he suffered.
Mm.
And Joseph had to suffer. Joseph is a type of Christ
yeah.
in the Old Testament. Mm-hmm. He had to suffer a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I remember mutual friend Rich Halcombe, he said, you know, it's not very often where God uses someone greatly whom he does not afflict deeply.
Wow.
Because you learn through the pain and through the heartaches and through the setbacks. And, mm-hmm. you know, we think about Johnny Erickson Tada.
Oh, yeah. She understands suffering because of her own suffering that she has experienced.
Right.
But we as a culture, we struggle with understanding suffering. I don't think we truly understand what suffering is.
Right. Well, and we talk about the fallacies of the prosperity gospel, mm-hmm. and a lot of that is because they shun suffering. They never mm-hmm. talk about that. God just wants you healthy, wealthy, and wise.
Yeah.
And, you know, we don't know the fellowship of his sufferings.
Mm-hmm. Well, and, you know, relating that back to what we're talking about with conflict and relationships, people who have suffered a lot, they're able to have deep, really deep, meaningful relationships because they can go really deep with people. They can have empathy where they've actually experienced some of the same things mm-hmm. that others have experienced, and it's made them just deeper people, mm-hmm. you know?
Well, it's hard. Nobody likes to suffer, but, you know, Peter talks about that. If you don't want to suffer as an evildoer, mm-hmm. then you created your own suffering. But if you suffer according to the will of God, you're doing what's right and you're suffering. You're a Christian in a country that arrests you for being a Christian and puts you in solitary confinement or whatever they do. You know, we have that book by Richard Wurmbrand, Tortured for Christ, where mm-hmm. he talks about his experiences in Romania. I mean, there is a sense that you can say, Lord, I'm doing this for you. And, you know, I trust you no matter what happens. And God uses that in great ways.
Yeah, I think we see that through the heroes of the faith. Talking specifically about the New Testament, Paul suffered immensely and how that grew him so much. And then I think you mentioned Peter, how much Peter grew from the Gospels to mm-hmm. his writings through Acts and then his writings, how much he grew in his relationship with God and in his relationship with others. Suffering definitely grew him as well.
Well, okay, so thinking about your life, the sufferings that you went through with your first wife, you know, those are lessons that you learned that you wouldn't trade for anything.
Right. But you don't want to go through it again.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to do it again.
Yeah.
If the Lord said, let's run this
You
back.
Don't want to go through it again, but I know for myself, I don't ever want to forget it. I don't ever want to forget where I came from because it gives me such a great perspective of what God has done
right.
in my life. And so I don't want to forget that.
Well, and as a counselor, as a pastor, it gives you tremendous empathy mm-hmm. for people that come to you and they're broken. And
yeah, certain guys, I can say to them, I can honestly relate that I've been similar to where you are.
Right. And it would be easy to lose hope.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very easy to lose hope, but just got to lean into God and focus on who he is,
right.
who he says he is.
So we have about a minute left, Chris. So what would be a good walk away for our listeners?
I would challenge you, encourage you to evaluate your heart, search your heart, let God search your heart and see, like, is there anything that's in me, any bitterness that's crept in, any resentment that's crept in, any way that I'm handling this relationship that's not right, that's not of the Lord, that I could be doing differently. So I would say really searching your heart in the relationships that you're in.
Yeah, great. Psalm 139, verses 23 and 24. Search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me and know my anxious thoughts and see if there be any hurtful way in me and lead me in the way everlasting. It's a great prayer for all of us to pray. Well, Chris, thank you so much for being my guest today as we've been talking about conflict in relationships. You're listening to Real Truth for Today, Pastor Jeff Shreve, and I will be out tomorrow. Alex McFarland will be sitting in for me, but go out, shine for Christ, and share what great things the Lord has done for you, and God will use you as his witness. God bless you.